Morning, everyone. Hope you're doing well. It's great to be here. I'm going to be speaking this morning. We're going to be continuing our series looking at our vision as a church. We want to just spend a few weeks at the start of the year just saying, what are we all about as St. Thomas Philadelphia, part of Network Church Sheffield? What are the really important things to us as a church that we're going after this term? And Mike has already kicked us off. I've got a couple of slides that just remind us of what we've already looked at. So we've looked at the fact that we want to be multiplying healthy disciples and transforming community. Mike looked at that a little bit a couple of weeks ago. And then we're just starting to look at our values. We've got these three values: going together, which Mike looked at last week; Jesus-centered, which, just to confuse you, we're going to come back to in a future week. And today I'm going to talk about for the marginalized. That's our kind of third value. These are things that are really important to us as a church, things that have been important to us for a long time, but still things that we're keeping on going after and going for. That phrase for the marginalized is kind of a broad phrase, quite intentionally. There's lots of different ways in which we might find people are marginalized, that they're pushed to the margins, to the sides of society or the world or whatever. It includes, but is not limited to, financial poverty. There are other ways, and we'll talk about that in a minute, that people might be experiencing poverty. And we want to be a church that is for these people, that's on their side. We believe that's something that's true about God, and we believe that that's something that should be reflected in the way that we live out our faith as the church. So I've got three things really for you this morning. I want to share a little bit of my story, just my journey with this particular thing and how it's come to be important to me and how I come to be kind of taking a lead on this stuff in our church and come to be particularly in this church in Sheffield and standing before you giving this sermon, I guess. Just my journey of how God shaped my heart to think that this is an important thing to him. We're going to look, unsurprisingly, at what the Bible has to say about this issue. And then finally, we're going to think about what does it look like for us as a church? What does it look like for Network Church Sheffield and St. Thomas Philadelphia in 2024 to be a church that is for the marginalized? And I believe we've all got a role to play in different ways, and we'll look at that towards the end. So to start with, just a little bit of my story. I grew up in Southampton. You can probably tell from my accent, I'm not from round here, or I would say lack of accent, but people have their different opinions. I would say I'm quite well off, quite rich in the world's terms. My parents would often tell me that growing up, and I would often say that can't possibly be true because I don't have all the toys and video games and whatever else I want. And they would say, well, it is true, Zach, we are actually rich and very well off compared to most people in this country and certainly around the world. And this was something I was kind of aware of, but didn't give it much thought. You probably don't when you're a child. You just have the experiences you have, and you get on with your life. When I was 18, I went to Guildford, the University of Surrey, to study music. Why did I go there? They had a really cool music course, which was really fun. I spent 3 years writing songs and composing music. I chose that course probably partly because I had a girlfriend at the time, this was not Liz, who was going to university near there. That didn't work out. I may have told that story before, but I did meet Liz, which was a massive bonus. Guildford was a very rich town. It's like just south of London. And I kind of started to become aware of that when I was there. I was like, these churches have loads of money, they have loads of resources, and this is amazing. And I started to be aware that maybe there were other parts of the country where there was more need. And I remember being there and just starting to think and pray and say, God, are you, you know, if you ever want to call me somewhere else, I'm open to that. I'm open to that idea. And there were a few like moments where God just brought me like face to face with people whose circumstances and whose life experiences were incredibly different to mine. I remember talking to like a couple of people who were sleeping on the streets. I remember one time I'd been off into town, spent all my rich money on some nice new shoes. I think they were literally from Primark, to be honest. But they were new shoes. I didn't really need them, and I thought they were cool. And I met this guy whose shoes had holes in. And I was like, what shoe size are you? And unfortunately, he said the same shoe size as mine. He must have had small feet. And I gave him my shoes, because I didn't really need them, and he did. And there were just a couple of other like random moments like that where God was just, I don't know, awakening something in me to say, there are people in this world who have very different experiences to you, and I care about those people, and I want you to care about them too. And this kind of grew in me over time, and I did a church placement as part of my ordination training about 3 years ago, roughly, in Plymouth. It was an HTB church in Plymouth, and kind of did a placement there, to be honest, because it meant we could stay with Liz's parents and just chill out with them and have a nice time. But this church had this amazing ministry. They call it Love Your Neighbor Ministries in HTB. And they started a food bank in COVID, and there's a really big drug problem in Plymouth. So there were loads of people who were struggling with addiction who were coming to this food bank, coming to this service. They were running Alpha off the back of it. I was meeting these people, hearing their life stories. I remember this one girl, she was not much older than me. She was probably, still really struggling with addiction, but she would come into the church and she would put this worship song on, and she would just have this sense of God being real and with her, and we would pray with her. And it just opened my eyes to the possibilities of how we can see God moving with people whose lives are so different to mine and maybe to many of ours here today. So that really inspired me. And then most recently, this is the final thing I'll say about my story. Liz and I were praying about where to go to be a curate. There's a long story of how you end up getting ordained in the Church of England. They don't like to make it easy for you, which is kind of good in lots of ways. It makes you really pray and think about what God's really calling you to do. And at one point on this, I'd been released by the people in Guildford, and they said, oh, you can look anywhere in the country now to go and be a curate. And that's quite overwhelming. There's quite a lot of options. I still had this niggling sense, maybe God was calling us somewhere away from Guildford, maybe to the north of the country. So I got in touch with some dioceses in the north of England, with Blackburn and Sheffield. And as I was praying, I was trying to work out whether this was the right thing. I was like, God, am I just imagining this? Am I just trying to like come up with my own strategy and plan for my life? Or is this really you speaking to me? And I was reading about a guy called Amos in the Bible. He's an Old Testament prophet, one of the minor prophets, not terribly well known. But I was studying him at theological college. And there were two things that really stood out for me about the story of Amos. The first one is that he's sent from the south of the kingdom of Judah to the north of Israel. God tells him to get up and go and preach and have a ministry to the people in the north. And the second thing, that sounded a bit like me. I was like, maybe God's calling me to do that, like this Amos guy. And then the second thing is that if you read the book of Amos, it's all about social justice. It's all about the way that God's people are treating the poor and the marginalized. And God's really angry about it. God's angry about what's going on in that country. And he's using the prophet Amos to communicate his anger and his passion for justice. And so those two things together really resonated with me, with what God was doing in my heart and what God might be calling me to. But I was still a little bit skeptical, because I'm not always a very good Christian. So I made a little bit of a deal with God. I was like, God, we've got this curate information evening tonight where they tell us about how it all works and all the Church of England's processes. And I said, God, if someone mentions Amos at this meeting, I'll know this is really you talking to me. I'm not saying that you should deal with God this way. I'm not necessarily recommending this, but this is what I did, and you can judge me or whatever. God, if someone mentions Amos, this seems very unlikely. Like, they're not going to talk about Old Testament prophets in the middle of this session. I was like, God, if someone talks about this guy, I'll really know that you're talking to me. And before I even got to this evening session where we learned about how to find a curacy in a church and whatever, I had this lecture on theology and disability. Again, I was like, well, it's definitely not going to come up here. But the only Bible verse and the first thing that this lecturer said in this lecture was probably the most famous verse from the book of Amos. It's about justice rolling down like rivers and righteousness like an never-ending stream. And I hadn't even got to the evening and I was just like, wow, okay, God, you really are calling me to do this. You're really calling me to go north, and I'm going to try and be obedient to that call and listen to what you're saying. And so, yeah, we talked to some people in Sheffield. They suggested this church. We came to visit. We heard all the stuff that's going on. We heard about the food bank and the debt stuff and the youth work. And we came and experienced worship here and got to know some people. And anyway, it was all amazing, and I'm very thankful to have ended up here. And I tell that story not because I'm particularly important or significant, but because I really recognize God being sovereign over my life. Like, God has shaped my experiences, my journey, my life in all kinds of ways, sometimes with my cooperation and sometimes probably without, to bring me to this point today. And I believe that God has done that for everyone. You are all here today, not by accident. You're here because God has shaped your life. God has called you to be in Sheffield. God knew that you would be in church this morning listening to me talk about this. And whether or not you're particularly called to get really involved with this kind of ministry, as I feel called to, God has something to say to you this morning as well. So secondly, what does the Bible say about this stuff? That was something that kind of grew on me throughout this whole, all these little experiences I was having. I was like having these experiences with people with very different experience in life to mine, but also reading in the Bible that this is something close to God's heart. So what does the Bible say? We're going to turn to Luke 4. If you've got a Bible with you, you might like to turn to it. It will doubtless be familiar to many of you, and I make no apology for reading it again, because it's foundational, I believe, to Jesus' ministry, and it's foundational for us as a church. It's going to come up on the screen as well. This is Luke's account of Jesus' life. This is the first thing that grown-up Jesus does in his ministry. He's announcing his ministry. He's telling people what he's all about. And this is what happens. We're going to read from verse 14 in Luke chapter 4. Jesus returns to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogues, and everyone praised him. He went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. He began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." I wonder if we can just flip the slide back to the bit about, no, not that far, the Isaiah quote. Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Brian. You'll probably know that Jesus is quoting something from Isaiah, and these verses have been foundational for this church as something that inspires us from the Bible to pursue justice. There are all kinds of verses Jesus could have chosen to introduce his ministry. There were all kinds of ways that he could have spoken about what he had come to do, what his deep ultimate purpose was. And yet these are the verses that he did choose. So if Jesus says they're important, then we should say they're important too. And this will probably be one of the biggest cases of preaching to the converted in the history of mankind, because you guys are amazing at this. I think that in this verse, there are both physical and spiritual realities that Jesus is saying he wants to address. You read this stuff about good news to the poor, freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind. This is the kind of stuff that when you then read the rest of Luke's gospel or any of the gospels, this literally happens. Jesus literally heals blind people. He literally frees people from the chains of demons. We see people broken out of prison in the book of Acts. This is stuff that God literally does physically for people who need physical help. They have physical stuff going on with their bodies, with their lives, and Jesus comes to bring physical freedom and transformation. But alongside that, we also see Jesus caring for people's spiritual needs. We see people see Jesus freeing people from the bondage of sin, the prison of sin, if you like. He sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners. Sin can be like a prison that traps us. It entices us and brings us into its net and stops us from living life the way God called us to be. Jesus spiritually frees us from sin. And this metaphor of opening blind eyes is one that we see all across the Bible in loads of places. Jesus literally opens blind eyes, but that's like also a metaphor for spiritually seeing Jesus, seeing God, knowing him, understanding him. God opening our blind eyes to see who he really is. So Jesus wants to do both those things. And there are loads of other places we see this throughout the Bible. Sometimes I think of when Jesus feeds the 5,000. The first thing that happens in that story is he sees that the people are like sheep without a shepherd. And so he sits down and teaches them. He gives them spiritual food. He tells them about God. He tells them what life like God can be like. And then they get hungry. They get physically hungry. They have a physical need. And so he says to his disciples, we'll feed them. And then he multiplies the food and feeds them. Jesus cares about both those things. He cares about their physical needs and he cares about their spiritual needs. You might think about the early church in Acts chapter 6, when they appoint deacons to give out food to widows who are in need because they don't have a husband to provide for them. The apostles say, we've got a really important job, which is teaching and prayer, the spiritual things, and you guys are going to have another really important job, which is giving out food to people who need it. Both of these things are really important to Jesus, to the early church, and to us as well. And I think sometimes churches can fall into two traps, two extremes, if you like. We can say, well, either we're going to pursue justice over here or and the physical stuff that's going on in this world, or we can say we're just going to pursue the spiritual stuff. And we don't, I think we need both. There's two extremes that I think we need to avoid on this side. We can preach the gospel and never do anything nice for anyone, which I'm sure none of you would ever do, but that would be a very unbiblical approach to Christianity, to share Jesus, to share the eternal hope, but never live that out here and now. And then similarly, we can go the other way and we can do all this good stuff, but we can never say why we're doing it. We can be nice people, but not allow Jesus to be at the heart of why we're being nice and why we're being compassionate. And I think we need to embrace a kind of holistic approach to this where we can do both. It doesn't have to be either or, but we can share the good news of Jesus. We can share the spiritual transformation he brings to us alongside the physical transformation that he wants to bring in our lives as well. And I think maybe some streams of evangelical churches, I don't think this church at all in any way, but some have overemphasized the kind of spiritual stuff and the eternity stuff that we like forget to say that Jesus cares about our physical needs. We say all that matters is people's eternal destiny. And there's a truth to that in some sense. I'm not saying that's not true and not important. But Jesus also really cares about the kingdom of heaven coming here and now. He cares about our physical needs and our needs as human beings. We've been created not only with eternity in our hearts, but we've been created here and now with physical bodies that Jesus came to heal and that he cares about as well. So I think we need both. The final thing to say on this is just a kind of definition of poverty, if you like. There are more than one way that we can talk about people being marginalized, people being experiencing poverty. We can think of spiritual poverty, as I've already talked about. We can think about physical and financial poverty. We can also think about relational poverty. Zacchaeus is quite an interesting example, I think, of how Jesus came to someone who's on the margins of society, but he's not actually poor. He's got tons of money. But he encounters Jesus and he suddenly experiences like something totally transformational as he meets Jesus. And it's not physical poverty that he's rescued from, but it's more relational poverty. He gives back money to those he has robbed or taken extra money from. He heals his human relationships. And most importantly, his relationship with Jesus is restored somewhat as well. So what does this look like for us as our church in 2024? This is important in the Bible. I've seen it become something important to me in my life. But what does it look like for us as a church? I think the main way that we've seen this outworked is through a whole number of huge, amazing social action projects. You'll know that at the start of this year, we launched a charity called FCT, the Food and Community Trust. They are doing amazing stuff all across the city, running food banks, running youth work for people in challenging parts of the city, helping people with their debt and doing all kinds of other stuff. I can't even begin to list all the amazing things that they do. And that's something that's come from this church, that was birthed in this church and is now operating in the city and beyond and having a huge impact. And that's something to celebrate and continue to support. But we really want to partner with FCT. They can't do all the fullness of what they're doing without the help of local churches. And we want to be the first church to be continuing to stick our hand up and say, we want to be part of this. We want to be going after this and supporting this kind of work. There's a few different projects that we are involved with. Yes, this is great. On the left here, I've kind of put like the physical stuff. So like giving out food to people and supporting people with their debt and running youth groups for teenagers and stuff like that. And then on the other side, I've kind of got the more spiritual stuff. And I want to talk about this kind of middle ground where there's one particular project called Connect Cafe, which I run, which I think is really important so that we don't end up with just having church over here that's spiritual and the food bank over here that's physical help, but so that we combine those two things together. And Connect Cafe and stuff like that is one place that we see this happening. And I think we really need more Christians. This talk is not primarily just a, can I get more volunteers for the stuff I'm doing? But it also is can include that. We need some more Christians in this kind of ministry because we need people who can not only meet people's physical needs, but we need people who know Jesus, who've experienced the life-changing power of Jesus in their lives, who can say to people, hey, I want to feed you. But do you know, I also know someone who feeds me spiritually, who's changed my complete outlook on life. We need more and more people involved. We have loads of amazing people already, but we would love to have some more people. There's so many opportunities within this kind of ministry. I want to tell a story about one person who's recently been impacted by the stuff that we're doing. She first came to one of our food bank sites. You may know that the Essex Food Bank has about 10 sites, different parts of the city. She came to one of these food bank sites, got some support, was doing all right for a while, and then found herself struggling again, came back to food bank, and eventually ended up receiving some debt help from Jane and from others, coming along to a family tea, which Jane and Rob run. And I met her at Connect Cafe. She'd been invited probably by me at Food Bank or something like that. We run this on a Thursday. It's like a slightly different thing to the food banks. The team are all Christians. We try to offer to pray for people. We do like an optional Bible study. We're trying to be a kind of place where people can come easily, but where their physical needs and their spiritual needs can be met. And I met this lady, she brought her granddaughter with her, and I played some random board game with her, and we just had fun. And eventually, someone had invited her to our Easter Sunday service. Did I remember our Easter Sunday service? It was absolutely crazy. We did it joint with Streetwise. Loads of people invited their friends. There were about a million people in here. I had to preach, and everyone was really loud. Not you guys, obviously. Some other people who remain unnamed. And I was like, how am I going to preach and say something meaningful? Tried to get the kids involved, so something about superheroes and how Jesus was better than superheroes or something profound and amazing like that. And I remember feeling very stressed and like there was just a lot of stuff going on that Sunday. And at the end of my talk, I said something like, if you want to become a Christian, today's a great day to do it. Why don't you come to the front in this next song? I'd love to pray with you. No one came to the front. I did later find out that two people who'd been here had prayed with someone else who they came with to give their life to Jesus. And that really encouraged me. But I was still pretty just tired and overwhelmed from the whole service. Had my day off on Monday. And then on Tuesday, as I normally do, I went to the food bank. And someone came up to me, this lady, and she said, oh, Zach, can I talk to you? And I was like, sure. And she came up to me and said, oh, I didn't feel comfortable coming to the front, but I really felt like what you said about becoming a Christian was for me, and would you show me how to pray to become a Christian? And I was like, wow, yeah, I can do that. So this is just one example of someone, and she's been coming for a while. We're still connecting with her. She's coming to Cafe. She's coming to Jane's Family Tea. She's been to Streetwise a few times. She's learning what it means to be connected with Jesus. She's learning what it means to have her physical needs met by our food bank and her spiritual needs met by Jesus. And I love that story, and I want to see loads more stories of that happening across the life of our church, across FCT, across this city. And I think it's amazing and it's exciting and it's something for us all to pursue together. And that's, I guess, the final thing I want to say is, what does it look like for all of us to do it? Not all of you are going to be free to come and help at our food bank in the daytime on a Tuesday or a Friday, or to come and help at Connect Cafe on a Thursday. If you are, please do come and talk to me. I'd love to talk about how you can be involved. Even if you are busy during the week, but you want to get involved and you have a heart for this and you sense God nudging you about it, come and talk to me and we'll find some other ways for you to help. We're thinking of starting a community meal one evening. That might be one thing that we could really use some team for, that you could be part of. Please pray for us. If you're not on the WhatsApp prayer group, please get on that. That's one way that prayer requests for this stuff get shared. Please ask us how it's going. Like, come and ask me, come and ask Jane Franklin, come and ask Katie Briggs, come and ask Anne and Sandy and Ralph, and I can't name all the people, but they're just the people who come off the top of my head. Ask us how it's going. Pray for us, support us, let us know that this is important to you as well, even if you can't physically be there and be part of what's going on. And finally, I just want to say that I think this is a calling for all Christians to be for the marginalized. And that might not mean that you are called to go and help in a food bank, but your life as a Christian, wherever God's called you to be, whatever spheres of influence you find yourself in your workplace, in your family, in your church life, I believe God calls all of us to be for the marginalized. So you might want to just have a moment to think to yourself, what does that look like for me? Our communities are a great way to make sure that people don't experience relational poverty. There's a huge crisis of loneliness across all demographics socially in our country. There are loads of people who are lonely, who need relationship. Can you invite them to be part of your community? Can you invite them to come and join in with some of the stuff that you're doing? Can you show them how amazing church is for you? I hope you find this church to be a place of life-giving community. I certainly do. And I would encourage you to get as involved as you can in communities with people here at this church. God calls all of us to pursue justice and to go after bringing people into Christian community. I'm going to finish there. I would love it if we would just take a moment just to say, God, what are you nudging me about with all this? What's my role in this? Are you calling me to come and get involved really specifically with one of these ministries? Are you calling me to pursue inviting people into relational community? Are you calling me to pursue justice in other ways? There's all kinds of different injustices and ways that people can be marginalized in society. You might be thinking of something completely different that I haven't mentioned, and you're thinking, wow, I really think God's nudging me to do something about that. Maybe I'll just invite the band to come back up and we'll worship some more in a minute. But before we do that, let's just have a moment of quiet just to listen to what God might be saying.